chance in romance in a nation's times as a board in a way to reward in lives that don't involve me. Still, at least I had a little bit of fun, some whiskey and rum. Sometimes I'm an arrogant, ignorant son of a drunken bum, but not quite scum. That life that don't involve me. So the madman, sorry about the sad man's story, but spare the gory details. No glory, go gladly forward to the next level of the test. God bless, I'm unimpressed.
I'm Marie Bernard, host of Synchronicity, talk radio for your mind, body, and soul. Join me Mondays at noon as we explore the universal energy that connects us all. Let's discuss our journey of self-discovery, joy, presence, and living with authenticity. We can create positive change in the world, and it starts within each one of us. Synchronicity, talk radio for your mind, body, and soul. Mondays at noon on CITR 101.9 FM, Vancouver. Welcome to Synchronicity Talk Radio for your mind, body, and soul. I'm your host, Marie Bernard, and this is CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver, or you might be listening in Kamloops at CFBX, in Nova Scotia at Axe Radio Canada, or online at CITR.ca, CosmicDimensions.com, EmpowerRadio.com, or on the Co-Creator Network. And today we are speaking with another New World Library author. I just love the books that come from New World Library. They send me some every couple of weeks. I get a new book from them, and the authors are always amazing. So today's guest is Ajayan Boris, and I hope I'm saying that correctly. He's the author of Effortless Mind: Meditate with Ease, Calm Your Mind, Connect with Your Heart, and Revitalize Your Life. Welcome to the show, Ajayan.
Thank you so much, Marie.
Thanks for being here. So, you said you have your own radio show. So where's that at?
It's in the Seattle area. It's KKNW, Alternative Talk Radio. My show is called Mind Matters.
Cool. So you're not far away from Vancouver then?
Not at all. In fact, I was delighted to hear that you're just up north.
Yeah. So you have instructed and guided thousands of meditation students in North America, Australia, Europe, and India, and you also have your radio show. So tell us how this book came about.
Well, you know, it's funny that you should ask, and just a minute ago you said how much you liked interviewing people from New World Library. Well, actually, it was the founder of New World Library that made this book happen. He came on my show a couple times, Mark Allen, and he had looked at my website, which is ajayan.com, and he said, "Ajayan, I love your website. You've got to write a book for us." And I got the title and everything, Effortless Mind, Meditate with Ease. You know, he just basically manifested the book, which is, of course, what he writes about it, what he talks about. And so I had, you know, been teaching for almost 40 years at that point, and I thought, you know, it's about time I write a book. Many of my students have asked for a companion book to the classes that I teach, or just a good book on meditation they can recommend to their friends. And anyway, there wasn't one that I just really felt enthused about, so I thought, okay, I'm going to do this. So that's how I wrote the book.
Awesome. Well, what an amazing compliment to have the founder of New World Library ask you specifically to write a book for them.
I was thrilled by that also because, interestingly, I had submitted over the years a couple of manuscripts for other books to New World Library, and they had considered them and then politely turned me down. And so this was really a thrill that the owner, you know, himself came up with the idea and signed me up to write the book.
Wonderful. Okay, so I want to jump in and ask you some questions about the book because I've been reading it. And so you write on page 4, why does effort, or maybe this is why I wrote the question, but why does effort yield positive results in nearly everything except the process of meditation? Because so many of us, we try to meditate and we can't because we have so many thoughts swimming through our heads and we try to work really hard at it and it gets frustrating and we give up.
Right. Okay. So the thing about it is, you know, in our daily life, ordinarily, we're in the waking state, you know, and so we've got our sort of ego mind is what's calling the shots. And when we sit to meditate, we're actually wanting to shift out of that, ego mind waking state. In fact, that's the point of meditation, is to kind of begin to go in a different direction, let's say, just generally. And the thing is, whenever you go to shift from that waking state to another state of consciousness, it has to be effortless. Otherwise, any effort that you make will just sustain that waking state. So take, for example, falling asleep. This is another case where you're shifting from the waking state to another state of consciousness. And every insomniac knows very well that the more they try to fall asleep, the more they're going to be tossing and turning. You know, they're not going to get to sleep. So until they simply stop trying, forget about falling asleep, and then the next thing they know, they're waking up the next morning. So, and it's like that with meditation. To shift from that waking state, it has to be effortless, because any effort will just agitate the mind and keep you right at the surface of the mind. And that will prevent meditation from happening. So everybody always says, you know, who does meditate, that their best meditations are those ones that are so effortless, they just fell into the meditation, or they just felt like they were meditated. And the point behind effortless mind in the practices I teach in the book is to simply make it systematic, so that you can always have that effortless experience of meditation, which will be, you know, the best experience of meditation.
Awesome. Well, and one thing that I really like about your book is that you go through, like, you give simple little steps one at a time. So you're not jumping right into like a full meditation. You're sort of learning and training yourself to let go a little bit by bit.
Yes. Yeah. Otherwise, you know, I think that's the only way you can teach in a book, for sure. And I think it's a good way to teach anyway. In fact, that's the way meditation has been traditionally taught, you know, throughout the centuries, is they'll, you know, little bit at a time. And then after a while, you get into the slightly more complex practices, and they're thought to be a little more esoteric. But that's only because they rest on the foundation that you've laid before. And so you have to kind of take it step by step. And the meditations are very simple. And like you say, it starts out with a very simple just exercise. But even that simple exercise called Mula Bandha in the book is enough to put you in a meditative state. In fact, if I can just tell you this, my mom read the book. And she started doing that first exercise in the book, and it's meant to just be putting you into a kind of meditative state for about 5 minutes, and then you get up. But she kept saying, boy, she'd go into that and just be in it for, you know, 15, 20 minutes, and then she'd realize the time had passed, and then she'd come out. So actually, although they're very simple steps, they can still be really effective.
Well, I actually wanted to ask you about the Mula Bandha. Is it like Kegel exercises? Because the way you're describing it, I was trying to find that feeling in my body, and it feels like if I'm doing a Kegel type exercise, am I doing it right?
Exactly. Okay. Right. Now, you know, I don't know the full history of the Kegel exercise, but I take it that it kind of arose from a fellow named Dr. Kegel, who was, you know, working with women in childbirth and such. But yeah, in the yogis had discovered this exercise many centuries ago, and what they found, because they're really great researchers in the subtle relationship between the mind, the body, and the breath, for instance, and so what they found was, in doing this exercise, it's kind of a squeezing of the perineum, and it's combined with some breathing and also a little bit of a meditation technique at the same time. What it does is it awakens the subtle energy that is kind of latent in the area of the root chakra, which is right there at the perineum. And so it awakens that subtle energy and starts to direct it upwards through the subtle channels that go around and through the spine. And that, so it's awakening that and directing it up towards the higher centers or the chakras and clearing those, and that puts you in the meditative state. So it's got an application that the yogis were exploring, you know, many centuries ago, that's entirely different from that which, you know, Dr. Kegel came out with.
But it's kind of cool because then you can sort of multitask.
That's right. That's right, totally. And, you know, that exercise does have a lot of physical benefits, too.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, you know, that's why it's used.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if somebody has continency problems, that's after childbirth, for instance, that can be really effective in helping that. So, and other benefits as well. But for you know, in terms of meditation, the benefit is that awakening of the subtle energies. And you can really feel it if you just do it the way that I lay it out in the book, where it also involves a little the coordination with the breathing and with that mental technique.
Hello.
Hi, I'm on the air interviewing. Thanks. Sorry about that. People just walking into the studio. Anyway, so I wanted to ask you, well, it's interesting that you get really clear on the chakras and what they are and where they are and what sort of energy that they produce and what happens when your chakras are not open or optimized. Like in the root chakra, it can create, like that's where our survival comes from, right?
Right, right. Yeah, the chakras are centers of energy and consciousness. So they have a kind of, you know, psychological implication. So if you've got some twists and turns, or you might say just stress or distortions at a particular chakra, it's going to affect certain psychological issues. And so, and they're an integrated system at the same time, so they definitely interrelate. But yeah, and I do go into that in the book somewhat, but at the same time, when a person, just for the sake of meditating, which is the real practical benefit of the book, you don't have to get into understanding all that, because that would be a distraction during the actual process of meditation. You know, the meditation itself is very simple. You don't have to be analyzing yourself or anything like that. And so, you know, it's just for the sake of some interest to have a rudimentary understanding of that psychological aspect of the chakras. But then you can just leave that behind and simply go with the innocent, very effortless experience of meditation. And then you go into that deep relaxation and peace and get the benefits of meditation.
Thank you for that. And so I want to ask you, actually, there's a quote from one of your teachers, and I thought it was really important, because so many times we judge ourselves. I've talked to so many people about meditation, and admittedly, I don't meditate as often as I feel would be effective for me. But so many people say, well, I have so many thoughts and I can't meditate because when I try to meditate, I still have all these thoughts and I can't clear my mind. And I'm trying to remind them that it's actually the process, it's the practice of bringing your mind back, not the goal isn't to have, or at least not in the beginning, not to have no thought. It's to practice not attaching yourself to the thought. But I really liked this quote: the mind is not a monkey at all, but a bumblebee going from flower to flower in search of nectar. Point the mind in the right direction and its nature will do the work for us. So
right.
Can you talk
right.
about that? Because I think that so many times people want to have this wisdom, but our logical minds, like you said, we get wrapped up in analyzing things. And so we detach ourselves from our wisdom. So how can we mm-hmm. use our thoughts and focus them in a way that's going to give us actual guidance rather than like just picking things apart?
Okay. Well, there's so many nuances to what you just asked, and a good deal of the book is devoted to kind of unraveling that question, honestly, because that is one of the main obstacles that people experience when it comes to meditation, is they feel their mind is just too busy, you know, and then it gets frustrating because they have this idea that they shouldn't have so many thoughts in meditation, that the mind should quiet down and they just be at this peaceful state. And so really this is so important to understand, and I can just assure anyone who's listening, that it's totally a myth in that you won't have thoughts in meditation. It's in the idea that you have to have a fairly quiet mind to meditate successfully is like saying you have to have perfect health in order to go to the doctor. You know, it's just not true. And actually, the mind is nothing other than awareness fluctuating in thought waves. That's what a mind is. This comes from the perspective of the sages of the East who have written about this. And so we can't expect the mind to completely dissolve every time we sit to meditate, because if all the thought waves cease, then what's going to happen? You'll be in that state of just pure consciousness, or the state of no mind. And certainly after some time of meditation, you'll have more and more of that. But for a good deal of time, you're still going to have a mind. And so we can't expect those thoughts to disappear. So what I like to use as an analogy, just to help people, think of the mind like an ocean of consciousness. And up until we start meditating, it's like we're hanging out at the surface of that ocean, going from thought wave to thought wave. And this is where we hang out, basically our whole lives, thought wave to thought wave. Now, when you start to meditate, you're actually dipping beneath the surface of that ocean. So you're starting to descend into the depths of the mind. And as you do, as soon as you go under the surface, you feel some inner silence, an inner quiet. And as you go deeper and deeper, that silence gets deeper and deeper. But it doesn't mean that all the waves of the ocean cease. There's still some waves going on the surface, but they're in the periphery. You're no longer completely engaged in those thoughts on the surface. They're just going by on the surface of the mind, and you're identifying more with the subtle silence at the depths of the mind. And that experience simply gets more and more profound until you're really fully identified with that inner silence, and finally just transcend into the very core of your being, which is just pure consciousness. You know, it's a state of pure silence, and that's what meditation's about. So the thing is, you can have many thoughts. Now, there's another aspect to this, if I can just say one more thing about this, and that is that meditation is, it's not just about having a good experience while you're sitting on your meditation cushion. It's about living more of your potential. And for that to happen, we need to remove the obstructions to that expression of our full potential. You know, that full inner creative potential, that fullness of heart and compassion and love and sense of unity with others and all of that. And so for that to happen, we have to go through some purification. And that's what allows meditation to help us to live our full potential. So what happens is you're meditating, and that purification starts, and that purification shows itself often by, like, stirs up impressions from past experience, and we may have more thoughts. So actually, the thoughts that we have in meditation can be the expression of the success of meditation, that the whole biochemistry is being purified and cleansed. And so this is much like the cycles. So we'll go through cycles of deep, silent meditation, lots of thoughts. Deep cycle, deep meditation, lots of thoughts. It's kind of like the cycles of sleep. You know, you have deep, dreamless sleep, and then you'll have dreams, and then deep, dreamless sleep. And we know that the dreams are very important to the balancing of the brain chemistry. And so the wholeness of the cycles of sleep that restore the body and mind. And likewise, it's the wholeness of all the different cycles of meditation that restore the body and mind at a deeper level. And that does involve thoughts. So actually, thoughts are entirely a part of the meditation. So I hope that helps a little bit. There, like I say, it's multifaceted, and to really understand it in depth, you know, I think reading the book is great, or hopefully this explanation has also helped.
Wonderful. Thank you, Ajayan. So it's time for a break. This is Synchronicity Talk Radio for your mind, body, and soul. I'm your host, Marie Bernard, and right now we are speaking with Ajayan Boris, and his website is ajayan.com. That's spelled A-J-A-Y-A-N. YAN.com. He's the author of Effortless Mind, Meditate with Ease, Calm Your Mind, Connect with Your Heart, and Revitalize Your Life. If you want to get on the air and ask a question, give us a call, 604-822-2487. That's 604-822-2487. We'll be back with more synchronicity momentarily.
The question, what kind of cities do we want to live in? How do we want our cities to be? Cannot be divorced from the question of what kind of people we want to be.
Join me, your host, Andrew Longhurst, every Tuesday at 5 p.m. for The City, an hour dedicated to critical discussions of urban issues. Live on CITR 101.9 FM and CITR.ca. For more info, visit thecityfm.org.
March 2nd to the 23rd, the 2013 Vancouver International Dance Festival invites you to experience the kinetic simulation of contemporary dance. Delivered to you on stages throughout Vancouver by outstanding dance artists from New Zealand, Denmark, Switzerland, Zimbabwe, Mexico, Malaysia, Korea, Montreal, and Vancouver. Information and tickets are available online at www.vidf.ca. or through our box office at 604-662-4966.
Hi, my name is Colin. I worked construction for a lot of years. I was the first guy they called on a new job. Then the pain started. Started real small, hardly could feel it. After a while, it got so bad I couldn't bend over. Couldn't sit, couldn't drive. Every doctor I went to couldn't find nothing. One even said it was in my head. From there, I lost everything. 10 or 15 years went by, smoking weed and whatnot. I don't remember the last years at all. Some people caught me trying to climb over a bridge railing, got me help. Now, with the right meds, we've got the pain under control. I used to think drug use was a death sentence. I got life instead.
This message was produced by Colombian Center Society and Radio Malaspina in British Columbia.
Welcome back to Synchronicity Talk Radio for your mind, body, and soul. I'm your host, Marie Bernard, and we are speaking with Ajayan Boris. He's the author of Effortless Mind, Meditate with Ease. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you.
Thanks. So I actually was reading now in the beginning of your first chakra meditation lesson, the chapter, you talk about meditating with a bigger purpose than just yourself, meditating for the betterment of everyone, which I definitely see the value in and I'm not arguing with. But I do have a bit of a bone to pick, because you kind of say that meditating for yourself is selfish, and that we need to stop being so selfish. But for me as a woman, I don't know how it is for a guy, but for me as a woman, I think I need to practice more selfishness, because so many of us give and give and give and give, and we give more than we have to give, and then we end up not having the resources to give fully. So for me, I feel like I just wanted to talk about the idea of selfishness and why you view meditating for yourself only as less positive.
You know, actually, I think you kind of stated it much more strongly than I do in the book, hopefully, because I would never say that it's, you know, selfish to meditate. We definitely deserve that time to ourselves, and we need to take self-care, and especially nowadays. Not only women, but everybody is so busy. I'm just amazed how busy people are, and myself included. And we need to balance that outer focus of all the time with something inner. You know, the field of action has to be balanced by the field of being, by really connecting with our own inner being. So I totally agree with you what you're saying, as far as that you have every right, and in fact, it's a good thing, totally a good, healthy thing to take that time to yourself. The point I make in the book, however, is that if every time you sit to meditate, and if you're meditating regularly once or twice a day, and you're thinking just of yourself, and this actually doesn't come from me, this is more of a Buddhist perspective, and I appreciate their point, and that is that there's just a little slight you know, implication of self-centeredness in that. And so why not use that and turn that around, because it really is the case that we affect so many people throughout our lives. So, like, and even throughout our day, you know how, like, one person with a bad attitude can, you know, can sort of piss off so many people and create a stir that's unpleasant for so many people. Likewise, if one person has a lot of joy and a lot of love and a lot of light, then they can uplift, you know, everyone they come into contact with. So that's just one aspect of it. Even vibrationally, when we meditate, if, you know, you go really deep in meditation, have a wonderful meditation, you're sending out good energy, good vibration into the atmosphere, and that's also going to have an uplifting effect on the collective consciousness. So these are real principles, and so why not just align our mind with those real principles and recognize that we're actually not just benefiting ourselves, but others as well, and then we gain that sort of, you know, bodhisattva mind that is, you know, selfless and so forth. So it's a way of actually getting an added benefit from the meditation. It's not saying that meditating, you know, without that benefit is a bad thing by any means. But adding this to the meditation creates only that much more benefit. So that's the point of that.
Okay, thank you. I mean, I totally understand, and I feel like the bigger impact you have, like when you share something with others, it creates a bigger energy in the world, and so it not only helps other people, but it also helps you even more than if you were just doing it for yourself. So, but I just sort of add a little bit of a judgment about the whole selfishness thing, because I do feel like so many of us actually don't take the time for ourselves, and that actually ends up being, we end up needing to be more selfish because we're not getting our needs met.
That's true. And in fact, towards the end of the book, I talk about, you know, making your life a meditation, and I bring out a little bit of the knowledge of the Enneagram. I don't know if you're familiar with that, but it's a way of looking at different personality types. And there are those personality types that are very, like, for instance, the 2 on the Enneagram is very, gains their self-worth by helping others. And so they're always looking to help others and help others. And so for a 2 particularly, having that focus on themselves, taking it off the other, is really essential and important for their personal growth.
Thank you very much. Now, I want to ask you about sitting for 15 or 20 minutes. I mean, how long do you ideally want to be meditating? What I like about your book is that you start off with little bite-sized pieces, but people, so let's talk about where you want people to start and where they, because people are always like, well, if I can't do it for 20 minutes, then I shouldn't do it at all.
Right. Okay. So yeah, if you go by the, you know, steps of the, that I lay it out in the book, you're going to start with probably about a 5-minute meditation. And then after you've kind of become completely familiar with that and comfortable with that, then you'll move up to, say, a 7 or 8 minute meditation. And then again, you become completely familiar with that. And so it just goes on up to about a 20-minute meditation. However, you know, if you want to only take advantage of the, you know, 8 or 10 minute meditation level, then that's fine. And in fact, even having learned the full program of effortless mind meditation, you can always, compress it or leave out some part to make it more efficient if you have to run to an appointment or something like that. But here's an interesting point is that people feel like, oh, I'd never be able to sit that long. But meditation is a very wonderful, enjoyable, sublime practice. In other words, if you're doing it correctly, and all that correctly means is effortlessly, doing a practice that actually works, that's a true meditation practice, and doing it effortlessly, you'll go to these deeper levels of the mind and experience a deep peace and stillness and inner silence that's going to feel very wonderful. You, like, your whole body and mind will just eat that up. And so it's a very enjoyable experience. So it's easy to sit for 15, 20 minutes. It's not a difficult thing that requires a lot of discipline. So that's one point that, you know, if you're anticipating, don't worry about it. Just start off with 5 minutes. You'll enjoy that, and you'll want more. And then you'll enjoy that, and you'll want, you know, 7-8 minutes. And then, so you'll just very organically increase that.
Thank you for that explanation. And I'm curious about Om, because that's a really, really common mantra, and people a lot of times start out with that. But you actually say that if people have a really active life, it might not really be the best mantra for them. Why is that?
Right. And this is something that my own teacher taught me, and it just makes sense because, and it's the understanding of many of the, you know, yogis and sages. So it's, although we may not have heard it too much in the West, it's not unfamiliar to people in the East. And the reason for it is that Om is the primordial vibration. It's like the first vibration, very close to the level of the unmanifest before creation arises. So it's just that vibration virtually of unmanifested being. And so if we're always meditating on Om and thinking Om and practicing that as our root practice, then our life starts to take on that quality of the unmanifest. And so we'll find relationships dropping away, our interest in actively engaging in, you know, an active life and having ambitions and desires and such will drop away, and we'll start to be much more inner-directed. And this is really beautiful for somebody who's on the path of renunciation. And in India, you know, there's two distinct paths. One is the path of renunciation, and one is the path of action and people, householder life. So for those who are engaged in, in living, active living. And so anyway, Om is perfect for the renunciate. It's not appropriate for the householder. So this is so there's a whole set of mantras that are appropriate for householders.
Awesome. And I'm curious, are you willing to share some of them? Because I know not everyone's going to go out and buy the book, but I definitely want anyone who's interested in learning how to meditate or has tried meditating and is having a hard time is definitely going to want to get this book, Effortless Mind, Meditate with Ease. But for some people who maybe want to get started right now, what tips do you have?
Well, okay, so that is a good question. Of course, just giving a mantra isn't really fair to people, because I want people to have a good, a good start. If you just give a mantra, you still have to know how to use the mantra and all that. That's why, like I say, going into it step by step. But I do talk about a mantra that's appropriate universally for householders in the book, and recommend that use of that mantra. It's called Devi Pranava. And Pranava is another name for Om. And Pranava just means that by which the pranas, are the vital breaths, are settled into their source. So the practice of Om will settle all the activity of the vital breaths in the body to go to their source, to just dwell in being. And so Devi Pranava, Devi means the goddess. So it's the equivalent of Pranava, of Om, except it's a Devi mantra. So, and that is the mantra of the feminine, and the feminine is creation. So the feminine embraces creation. It doesn't deny anything. So it's like, you know, the divine mother who wants not only spiritual enlightenment, but material prosperity, wants all fulfillment of all desires for her children. So that's the idea behind Devi Pranava. So that's in there. So I sort of hesitate to just say a mantra. Also, they're considered sacred, so it's not so good to just speak them out.
Oh, I'm sorry about that.
No problem. No, I appreciate your question very much. You're thinking of your listeners, but they don't have to buy the book. They can see it in a bookstore, look in there, and the mantra is in there. But there's also, learning the practices that lead up to that, like the Mula Bandha and the chakra meditation and all of that is very important, because the mantra just by itself is not going to be of much benefit.
Well, one of the things, as soon as I started reading your book, I have to tell you, my best friend tries to meditate a lot, or, you know, sometimes we go through phases, just like with exercise, where we'll be at the gym and really on a good track, and then we'll sort of fall off the wagon and have a little bit of trouble getting back on. And so that's sort of how it's been with his meditation. But when I started reading this book, I really, like, I'm going to loan it to him now that we've done the interview, because I feel like it has been a struggle for him and such hard work. And you really make it clear that meditation is not about efforting. I mean, you need to take that time and create that space and sit. But beyond that, it's not about the effort. It's not about the forcing things to happen. And like you said, the more you try, it's just like trying to sleep, the harder it becomes.
Exactly. And like, you know, the key was when you said he tries to meditate a lot, the trying is what's causing the problem. And so, yeah, that's great. Yeah, by all means, lend him the book and see what happens. And just, from reading it, I'm sure he'll get the message of effortlessness, because that's really in there strongly. It's what I call the first essential principle of meditation. So hopefully he'll really attend to that, because if he's built up a habit of trying, you know, he'll have to pay special attention to just letting go and letting the process happen. It's, if I can say, you made that quote earlier about the mind not being a monkey, but being like a bumblebee, you know, seeking the nectar. So the mind is always going towards more charm, more happiness. And if we can just get it going in the right direction, the inward direction, it'll find automatically that beautiful peace and stillness and quiet within is very satisfying to the mind. And those deeper layers of the mind, which have much more creative intelligence, are very satisfying to the mind. So that's where the nectar is. And the mind will automatically go to that if we just allow that to happen effortlessly.
So do you think that this is part of our culture that, I mean, I'm having trouble articulating. I have all these thoughts coming at me all at once, so I'm going to try and sum this up succinctly. But even like the process of effortless meditation, I feel like we need it not only for the benefit of the experience of meditation, but also the practice of just not trying so hard, because we're trying so hard all the time in our lives. We're efforting so much. And it's almost like when you're working out a muscle, you need the rest period for the muscles to actually build up. You put the effort in, and then you actually have to take a break, or your body's not going to recover. And so meditation with effortless in mind kind of feels to me like that almost.
That's a beautiful analogy. I should have had that one when I wrote the book. Thank you.
Well, maybe you can use it in your next one.
I'll borrow that from you. Yeah, that's true. That's really true. And we want to get into that flow. So, you know, there's such a thing, they call it the flow even. And so, you know, and athletes experience this in their, you know, perfect moments, like making a perfect ski turn or whatever. And that's how we can live all the time. It doesn't have to be such an effort. So anyway, that in meditation is a way of starting to get ourselves going down that track. And then we can start to make our whole life more easy and effortless that way.
I love that, because so many times on this show, we talk about like the law of attraction, and we talk about getting in the flow. And I've even had Summer McStravick, she does flow dreaming, and it's all about getting in the flow. But yet, so we know there's this concept of being in the zone and being in the flow, but so many times we're just like, we're working so hard to get there that we never get there, because you can't get there through forcing it.
Right, right. Yeah, and, you know, another thing is, I mean, we have all this immense creative potential within, you know, and actually if you read the literature on the creative process, different scientists and artists who have written about their most creative revelations, you know, they happen not when they're struggling to solve a problem, but when they then let go and they're, you know, taking a walk on the beach or in the shower, or, you know, when their mind, for whatever reason, just quiets down, and then they get their insights. So that, you know, if we can tap into those deeper creative levels, where thought is much more interconnected, much more creative, then we won't have to make such effort. We'll be living at a level where ahas are just commonplace, you know, and a place of much more reverence and awe for life and moving with life instead of feeling like we somehow have to fight it or you know, brace ourselves against it or push forward against it, something like that.
So I'm also curious now, with the chakras, if we have, and I know you said we don't need to analyze it that much, we just sit with mm-hmm. it and have the experience, but and this is probably me trying to effort even more, but so, but is it, if we notice certain problems arising in our lives or certain fears that could be associated with the chakras, would you say it's effective to focus our time more on that one chakra or the series of chakras that may be involved with that root problem? Or is that just me trying too hard again?
No, you could do that. You could certainly do that. You could add a little extra focus. Keeping in mind that, you know, it's an integrated system, so you want to go through all the chakras, but if you feel there's a particular blockage at a certain chakra, then, you know, you can definitely spend a little more time at that chakra. That would be absolutely appropriate.
Awesome. Thank you. And I want to ask you also about the breaths, and then I'm going to give you a little bit more of like what you want to focus on for the rest of the show. But you had also mentioned gentle breaths equal a deeper experience. And for me, like, I feel like the deeper the breaths, it's going to be better. So why is it better to have more gentle breaths?
Well, okay. So what is meditation? It's basically going from that conscious thinking level, which is a kind of an agitated level of thought, in comparison to these quieter, deeper, subtle levels of thought. So it's like the mind is settling in and going to subtler levels of thought and subtler levels of thought, and then it just transcends the subtlest, and then you're simply abiding in the core of your being. You're simply being. So meditation, in a sense, is doing less and less and less and less until you're simply doing nothing, just being. And that's kind of the essence of it. And so the thing is, the mind and body are very closely related, so that, and the yogis have noticed this relationship over the centuries, is that as the mind settles down to these quieter levels, naturally the breath becomes very fine. And very, but also very, not only very fine, but fine means powerful, actually. It's like going to the atomic level of breath, where breath becomes just energy, so that it's a very fine, still breath, but it's imbued with tremendous potential energy. So, and that helps to awaken those energies in the body as well, to clear the chakras. So actually, yeah, it's just that relationship. Finer level of mind equals a finer level of breath. And the finer level of breath, when it gets very fine, is just pure energy. And so that's called prana.
Awesome. Thank you. Well, we are speaking with Ajayan Boris. And am I saying Ajayan?
Yeah, you know, Ajayan? You're doing great. Ajayan. I say Ajayan. I'm sure it's an Indian name. In some parts of India, they may say Ajayan, but I say Ajayan.
Ajayan. And you are the author of Effortless Mind, Meditate with Ease, Calm Your Mind, Connect with Your Heart, and Revitalize Your Life. And you can find him at ajayan.com, which is www.ajayan.com. Again, the name of the book is Effortless Mind. So we have about, I know you have a radio show. You said you're sitting in the parking lot outside the station right now.
Yeah, right.
So thank you for taking time out of your schedule for that. I'll give you, I'll probably wrap up with a song about 5 minutes before, so you have time to get in for your show. And I'm just wondering what you want to spend the last few minutes on. I would love to talk more about the chakras, but this is your book. What do you think is the most important things for people to know?
Well, you know, you've covered a lot of really good, you've done some great questions, and thank you for that. I'm happy to talk about the chakras more. I think the energetic body as a whole is very interesting. You know, that's something that... you know, it's kind of fascinating for people to explore, and it's actually quite accessible, you know, to experience the, you know, there's grosser and subtler levels to everything, to the mind and to our body. And for instance, well, okay, this car that I'm sitting in right now in the parking lot, you know, at the surface of it, it's just this inert car. But if you go to a subtler level, there's innumerable molecules shimmering with activity, you know, and you go to a subtler level yet, and there's immense dynamism of the subatomic particles, and it just pure energy at some level. So, I mean, there's all these layers to life, and that holds true for our own body and mind as well. And so one of the most wonderful entrees to meditation is, you know, approaching it through this energetic body. And that's how I do in the book, in the book Effortless Mind. We start out with that exercise we were talking about earlier, the Mula Bandha, and along with the little, very gentle meditation, and it begins to open you to that experience of the energetic level of your being. And you become aware of these subtle energies flowing in your body, and it starts to open the channels, and that energy starts to flow in a balanced, harmonious, even way. And that expands your consciousness, clarifies your consciousness. You start to feel more peaceful, relaxed. Anxieties melt away, and stress melts away. And at the same time, you feel much more energy. So that's, you know, that's how you can naturally move into meditation, and then from there the effects kind of cascade to the mind and to the emotions. The emotions get balanced, the mind becomes calm and expansive. So anyway, I just talked about it, so I don't know if you have any questions about that. but that's kind of an interesting you know, perspective on meditation and the benefits of meditation, thinking of it in terms of the energetic body becoming clear and the energy is flowing in a balanced, even harmonious way.
Thank you for bringing that up. Actually, I did have it written down and I wanted to ask you about it and then I forgot. So thank you for bringing up the energetic
sure.
body. And it's interesting how, I mean, you really focus on how the mind and the body, they're connected. Like we try to separate them, but they're parts of the whole, right? Can you talk more about that concept?
Yeah, you know, other authors have also talked about this. I remember, you know, Deepak Chopra long ago in one of his earlier books was saying how, you know, mind and body are really just two coins of the same, you know, two sides of the same coin. There are two aspects of the same thing. And in the traditional Indian yogic perspective, they talk about the five sheaths. And so they have these five layers to our being. And the first is the body. That's the physical body. They call it the sheath of food. And then the energetic body, the pranic body. And then the mental / emotional body. And then the intellectual body, which is sort of that level of the intellect that has the finest sort of cognition of truth, of revelation, and then the bliss body. And then those sheaths cover the inner core of our being, which is just consciousness. So that's kind of how they look at it, that there's all these layers of our being, and they're not, it's not, you know, kind of an either or. They're just like one sheath after another. And when you meditate, what you're doing is basically having that influence of pure consciousness, that core of our being, radiating through and purifying all the different sheaths. So it's purifying the bliss sheath, the intellect sheath, so that we have, you know, a clearer our connection with the higher truths of life, purifying the mental emotional body so that the mind becomes expansive and pure and the heart opens to compassion and unconditional love, purifying the energetic body. So like I said before, the subtle energies are fully awakened and flowing in an even and balanced and harmonious way throughout the body, and then purifying the physical body so that our biochemistry is really pure, so that we have the biochemistry of bliss. You know, every emotional state, like if you get angry or if you have anxiety, it's got a biochemical basis. A certain kind of chemistry in the body supports that. If you have depression, you'll have a certain kind of biochemistry. And, of course, psychiatry tries to treat those different, you know, chemistries with, you know, different pills that will modify that brain chemistry. But if through meditation what we can do is actually purify that biochemistry so that it becomes truly normalized, and eventually we end up with a biochemistry of bliss, of peace. And so that's, you know, that's another benefit of the meditation.
I love that. And I wanted to talk about the body and bliss, because speaking of bliss, so many times people will have some kind of, whether it's through meditation or just some kind of like revelation that happens, some kind of inner knowing, and will have this feeling of bliss. And then it can be like chasing the bliss dragon, right? Like we try to get back to that place.
Right. You want to get more of that. You want to get back to it. So then you start to have a little bit of a grasping toward it. Is that what you're talking about?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, that's where, you know, that amounts to another kind of effort. You know, you've had a wonderful experience, and then you want more of that. So you'll very subtly be grasping at that. And, of course, when you find yourself doing that, just let it go. It's just like any other thought in meditation. It's fine that it's there. It's no problem that it's there. But we're just unconcerned with it, so we just let it go. And so then you come back to the process. And the actual process of meditation needs to be innocent and effortless. It's like Jesus said, you know, to enter the kingdom of heaven, you need that innocence of a child, that childlike innocence, so that we're not grasping. We're not trying. We're not pushing in any way. And so with that innocence of a child, you just do the practices, and then the bliss will come of its own accord. You know, it's nature that produces that bliss. It's not us that can produce it. You know, our ego mind can't produce it, but through the effortlessness, nature can will produce it. So that's kind of the way to handle that.
Thank you very much. And I just want to end, unless there's something else that you want to add, I want to talk about the body, because I feel like so many of us are really out of touch with our bodies. I mean, we live in them all the time, but we're not aware and present in our bodies. And I think that one of the benefits of the Mulda Bandha exercise is sort of bringing our awareness into our body.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good point. And actually, yes, so the Mulda Bandha does that. It kind of incorporates some physical, you know, gentle physical motion or application of, you know, squeezing those muscles. So that's kind of, in a crude way, it's bringing your awareness to the body, you could say. Crude in the sense that you actually have to do something physical. Later in the book, I talk, in fact, almost throughout the book, you'll see that the use of the various mantras always pertain to some aspect of the body. That's because the body is our vehicle. You know, it's the vehicle for our spirit. It is the temple. And so we want to purify this vehicle. And so we use those pure vibrations of the mantras at each chakra. And your awareness is on a particular part of the body as you do that. And so that has a very purifying effect on all the layers of the body, all these sheaths that I just talked about. And then at the end of the meditation, and then there's a meditation in the heart, you know, so that opens that heart chakra. Then with a very powerful mantra, the Devi Pranava, and then you take all that awareness, which has been just saturated with those pure vibrations of the mantras, and then go through the whole body bit by bit, and just sort of bathe your body in those fine vibrations. And so that has a very cleansing effect. And you know, the yogis traditionally talk about the possibility of greatly extending the lifespan of the body. by such meditation, because you're taking that influence of pure consciousness, which is unbounded and infinite, eternal, immortal, that spark of the divine that's within you, and you're directing that to all the layers of your body. That influence of immortality, of eternity, starts to saturate every cell of your being. And so they say that you can live, you know, for a long time, let's just put it that way. So that's a possibility in the extreme application, right? But even just meditating, like, you know, 20 minutes once or twice a day, it only stands to reason is going to, improve health and perhaps even, you know, prolong lifespan, because we know that stress is a major cause of so many different illnesses, even deadly illnesses like cancer and heart disease. And so if we have a way of managing stress and of calming our whole system and getting that, they call it the, you know, parasympathetic nervous system dominating, so that we feel that peace and that ease, which is the opposite of the fight or flight response. If we can get that going in our whole body and totally, you know, ameliorate the influence of stress, then it only stands to reason we're not going to, if you took a segment of the population who's meditating like that, there should be a lower incidence of heart disease and stress-related illness. And so they should have, on the average, a longer lifespan. And I don't know of research that has conclusively proven that as yet, but, somebody should do that research, because it only stands to reason that that should be the outcome.
Thank you. And actually, that brings up another question that I wanted to ask you about. Sure. Your experience about the chakras, but we're running out of time. So I'm just going to ask you if there's anything that you would like to add before we close the show.
No, I think you've done a great job, Marie. I really appreciate being on your show. You're just it's just lovely talking with you.
Thank you so much, Ajay. And, well, you're welcome back anytime, and I'll let you go so that you can run into the building and get your show underway.
All right.
All right.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you. Have a good day.
Okay.
Take care.
You too.
Thanks. So that was Ajay and Boris. He is the author of Effortless Mind, Meditate with Ease. Calm your mind, connect with your heart, and revitalize your life. Coming up in just a moment here on CITR is Parts Unknown with DJ Chris-rific. He is in the background getting his music set up.
Namaste.
Namaste. You can find Ajayan at ajayan.com. His name is spelled ajayan.com. And we will be back with more synchronicity next week. I want to send you lots and lots of love, lots of sparkles. I hope you have a wonderful day and a wonderful week. And if you're in Vancouver, enjoy the sunshine. It is gorgeous out there. Here is a song by Surya Devi, her music for the masses, mixtape for the masses. And you can actually download that for free. Just Google Surya Devi and you'll be able to find her. So be well. I love you so much. Namaste.
Blissful silence is the true nature of divinity. Amma.
Jazz is a word that means many different things to many different people. The best definition of jazz that I know of is the jazz show on CITR with yours truly, Gavin Walker. Monday nights, 9 to midnight, with the jazz feature at 11 o'clock. Check us out every Monday.
Playing on and on and on. Gosh, so loud.
Man, I wish we had a safe place to play music.
Yeah, and shows too.
The Safe Amplification Site Society is a non-profit group dedicated to establishing a legal, affordable, all-ages venue for music and arts in Vancouver. For more information or to get involved, check out www.safeamp.org.